So you literally flew to Iraq mm-hmm. with your pockets stuffed with dollar bills.
Yeah, I had thousands of dollars in my pockets for myself and my former wife. We're so good friends. And her name is Faiza, the same name as this poor Yazidi girl who was enslaved. So when I got the message in May that ISIS was willing to sell a girl named Faiza, it was like a knife in the heart. I couldn't believe it. It's the same exact name as my ex-wife. We just got divorced in April. So I called her up and said, Faiza, you know, there's a girl who shares your name languishing as a slave in Mosul as the bombs are falling. Do you want to help me so I can go to Iraq and free her? So it was a very moving experience for me and my former wife, Faiza, for me to go there into this, you know, 110-degree war zone and get one girl out of that maelstrom of the burning city of Mosul and reunite her with her parents. Just before Mosul fell, by the way, and all those ISIS guys were killed and wiped out by U.S. bombs and Kurdish troops and Iraqi troops.
So let's talk specifically about the Yazidis. Explain the situation when you first went there to try to rescue her.
Okay, so I'll start off by explaining who the Yazidis are. You know, they are an ancient race going back to the mist of time. They're traceable back to ancient Babylon or Persia. And they are pagans in the sense that they worship pre-Abrahamic gods, gods that were there before Abraham and the Jews and the Christians and the Muslims came along. And they live in northern Iraq. They used to be much farther spread, but they've been killed over the centuries by surrounding Muslims. They worship a god called Melek Tawus. And Melek Tawus is seen as a fallen angel. And the Muslims around them, Turks, Arabs, etc., equate Melek Tawus, this fallen angel, with another fallen angel, Satan. And they consider the Yazidis to be devil worshippers. So for centuries, they've repressed them, they've exterminated them, but never as bad as in 2014. In August of 2014, a new Muslim group called ISIS swept north, conquered Mosul, and then conquered their ancient homeland. They lined up the priests and blew them up in their temples. They slit the men's throats ritualistically, and they killed any woman over 40 and dragged thousands of young girls away as sabiya, which means Quran-endorsed sex slaves.
And so what was the situation for this young girl amidst this context?
Yeah, so in this context, you have one girl, one of many of these young slaves. Her name was Faiza. She was 11 years old. They dragged her away to Mosul, and she was traded amongst several owners. I joined a team led by a woman named Anne Noranya, who comes from Britain. She's a humanitarian, and she works with the Yazidis to help them free these women from slavery. We went into Iraq and negotiated with a smuggler who then went into Mosul as the city was being attacked by U.S. forces, Kurds, and Iraqi army. And we paid $17,000 to get her freed from her owner. And the smuggler got her out of ISIS-controlled territory and gave her to us, and we reunited with her family in Dohuk, northern Iraq.
Were you concerned at all that this exchange of money could go wrong?
Yes, you know, it's always a fear. You know, you're in a war zone, you're dealing with a fanatic, a smuggler. I mean, it's a bad balance, a bad combination. But the smuggler was trusted. He succeeded before in getting girls out. So we put our faith in him, and in the end, we're okay.
And I noticed you have sort of a blog post in which you write about this experience, and it has some photographs of the family, and they're a little blurry in some instances, but you can see the emotion on their faces during this reunion. Did they ever expect they would see this member of their family again?
No, it's very rare. You know, it's very rare that they're able to get in there and free one of these poor Yazidi slave girls. So it's a miracle. To me, it was an experience of a lifetime. You know, to be one American who actually made a difference. You know, there's so much cynicism in the world, so much disconnect from the tragedy in other lands. And to travel from Istanbul to Iraq and go to the north and free one girl in this world of crisis and a collapse of Iraq and collapse of Syria and the rise of ISIS, for me, it was very gratifying to have one girl saved.
Why were they willing to give her up?
And that's what's interesting. So ISIS is dying. You know, it used to be controlling an area larger than Britain with 8 million people. But in the last 3 years, it's collapsed. And they lost their greatest city, Mosul. So ISIS members were trying to sell their girls to get money to escape to Turkey, pay off smugglers, and get themselves free from the encirclement of U.S. troops and Kurdish and Iraqi troops.
Brian Glenn Williams, you were, as you said, recently in Mosul. Describe what it's like there now in the streets. You know, what's happening there?
Yeah, so, you know, we don't get a lot of coverage out of it, but we know this is the largest battle on the earth right now. You know, we have all these forces coming together, Kurds who are our friends, the Iraqi army who are our friends, and local Yazidis and U.S. Green Berets, all encircling this massive city of over 2 million people. You know, it was a bloody war. Over 3,000 Iraqi troops died in the war. Fortunately, no Americans have died in Mosul, but surrounding areas, four have died. But, you know, it was hot. It's dangerous. The sirens come down the streets as they bring casualties back from the war. You know, I embedded with two Kurdish generals on the front lines fighting ISIS. And my most moving experience was seeing these young Kurdish female snipers, women standing up to ISIS. So being on the front lines there and looking across the valley and seeing our allies, the Kurds. You know, they love Americans.
What was their reaction to you, to seeing you there?
You know, everywhere I went in the north, you know, this is the northern part of Iraq, it's called Kurdistan. And the ethnic group there are called Kurds, and they're Aryans, and they're enemies of the Arabs. And when I traveled around the area on the front lines or in the cities or in the capital, wherever I went, Kurds embraced me. You know, they thanked me. They all loved Obama for bombing ISIS and launching this campaign to help save their enclave from ISIS. So at every checkpoint I stopped at, soldiers posed for selfies with me and told me, when you go out to America, tell them we want to be your 51st state.
And the Feza that you freed, where is she now?
Well, sadly, you know, she's living in a large, sprawling refugee camp in northern Iraq. There's 2 million refugees living in this area called Kurdistan. There's only 3 million Kurds living in Kurdistan. Now there's 2 million refugees. And I visited those camps last year and this year. And boy, the conditions are really grim. You know, it's 110 degrees every day. They have no electricity for air conditioning. They get meals once a day. They're living in these primitive little plastic tents. No hope of getting jobs. They can't go to their homeland because it's a war zone. ISIS destroyed their main city of Sinjar. You know, they experienced genocide, the destruction of a race. So this ancient race, which survived since, you know, Hammurabi's time, you know, ancient Babylon, sadly, it might die out in our lifetimes. There were less than 1 million before ISIS annihilated them. And this poor girl, Feza, is a face of hundreds of thousands of Yazidis living in this limbo. My hope is that maybe her and her family and all these Yazidis can find safety in Europe or America.
Well, Brian Glenn Williams is a professor of history at the University of Massachusetts, Dartmouth, and he writes about Iraq and Afghanistan. His most recent book is Counter Jihad. You can find more at our website, ripr.org. Professor Brian Glenn Williams, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.